The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, not only did football season start last night, but damn, we had us a good-ass game that went all the way down to the wire and showed you exactly why the sport of football is literally a game of inches. So Thursday night football kicked off last night between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens. The Chiefs were, of course, raising their banner for their Super Bowl championship. They are going for the three-peat this year. And then the Baltimore Ravens, they are just coming off of a fairly successful season. I mean, of course, not winning the Super Bowl, that usually means unsuccessful. But, I mean, coming off of what they are last year, I mean, Lamar Jackson MVP season last year, and this is still a pretty solid team. And, I mean, they did add Derrick Henry as well. So it was interesting to see what was going to happen there. To me... Now, Kansas City did hang on to win 27-20, but to me, the Baltimore Ravens pretty much shot themselves in the foot. For one, way too many penalties, but to be expected. At the first month of the season is going to be sloppy as fuck from everybody. There are going to be some difficulties and growing pains from a lot of teams and a lot of players starting out the season just because they don't get a preseason anymore. So it's, you know, they got to dust off the rust and work some things out. So I think Baltimore, they'll be fine, of course. I mean, they played a solid game last night. It's just the stupid penalties cost them in a lot of ways. You know, Lamar Jackson, that dude carried the fucking team last night. He was making some big-ass plays. He was running the ball. He was passing the ball. He was doing it all. And then Derrick Henry, they went away from him. I think that was a huge problem for them in the second half. Is the first half, they were riding Derrick Henry hard. I mean, he scored the first touchdown of the game, and he looked like it was going to be all about him. And then in the second half, they really went away from him. And I think they need to really start going with Derrick Henry. The guy can carry the load. The guy can shoulder the burden. He is that dude. So keep giving the ball to Derrick Henry. And, but I mean, hey, it's game one. Like I took the Chiefs in this game because I thought, you know, they're raising the Super Bowl banner. It's at home and, you know, they're the defending Super Bowl champs and not much has really changed with them. So I expected them to win, but I mean, Baltimore, they were in it till the very last second. And, unfortunately, their tight end, likely his toe was out of bounds. It looked like a touchdown in real time, but then when you played it back on the instant replay, literally by like an inch, his toe was out of bounds. And so that got called back. But, I mean, got to give it up to Baltimore, though. They played a solid game. They were down by 10 points at one point in this game, and so they made it a really solid game. They unfortunately, you know, missed a field goal as well, so that cost them some points. But overall, it was a great game. You look at the Chiefs offensively; they've got some depth at the wide receiver position. Of course, you got Mahomes, who went 20 for 28, 291 yards and a touchdown. But like I said, Xavier Worthy is the dude to watch out for, and he had two touchdowns last night. One was on a running play; the other was a big catch. So look out for Worthy. I kind of feel like Worthy's going to turn into their wide receiver one. Rashee Rice also had a solid night last night, but I look at Worthy, and I was telling you, I know all about Worthy because he played for my Texas Longhorns. So I've been watching this dude for the last couple of seasons, and he is a beast motherfucker, and I expect him to fit right in with the Kansas City Chiefs as he did last night. So he had two touchdowns, but you know, I look at this receiving core of the Kansas City Chiefs, and I have a feeling it's going to be pretty potent for them throughout the rest of the season. But that was an excellent start to the 2024 season, and so let's get into the rest of week one, what we have for the rest of this week. Also, did want to let y'all know, this is going to be the fourth year between Simon and I picking picks throughout the year. We started 4 years ago. on Simon's show. He's had some work issues and health issues he's been dealing with over the last couple of years. So that's why we haven't been doing his show lately. Hopefully we will get back at it at some point. But until then, we're going to keep it rolling with our picks. And I've kicked his ass 3 years in a row. So I'm sorry, Simon. You gotta step it up this year. You can't get your ass beat 4 fucking years in a row. So we'll see what he's got. But we both started off the weekend 1-0 because we both had Kansas City. I had Kansas City winning 24-20. He had Kansas City winning 26-24. So we both expected it to basically be what it was last night. So we are both 1-0 on the season right now. We do have our Friday game of the season. Week one is so fantastic that we basically get football from Thursday all the way till Monday. And so Friday, this is the first time that we are getting a Friday game, week one. It's going to be played in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Tonight, it is the Green Bay Packers at the Philadelphia Eagles. Right now, the Eagles are a 1.5-point favorite. And I'm sorry if some my favorites might be off right now because I printed this out on Monday. So I know some of the stat lines have changed. So if you're like, fuck you, bitch, that ain't true. Yeah, sorry about it. That's just what it says on my paper. So that's what I'm going with. So right now, at least according to my paper earlier in the week, the Eagles were a 1.5-point favorite on this one. As I stated earlier when I was making my predictions on the season, I feel like the Packers are going to be one of the best teams in the NFC. And I think the Eagles are going to fall off. So with that being said, I think it's going to actually be the Packers dominating tonight's game. I think they're going to have a really solid game offensively. I think they are a team that were on the rise towards the end of last season. And I think they're just going to carry it on into the rest of the season. And like I said, the Eagles, they've got some growing pains because they're missing a whole bunch of guys, just some older guys to retirement, number one being Jason Kelce at the center position. So I feel like that's going to have a huge ripple effect for them offensively, and they're going to need to find their way throughout the season. And so since the Packers, I feel like, are already a complete team and already know what they're working with, where the Eagles are still finding their way, I think it's actually going to be a Packers pretty much dominating this game from start to finish. I've got the Packers winning 31-21, and Simon's got it close, but he also has the Packers winning this one 27-24. Then moving on to Sunday's matchups, we have the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Atlanta Falcons. Right now, the Falcons are a 2.5-point favorite. This is going to be the beginning of the Russell Wilson era, maybe, in Pittsburgh, because he does have a calf injury that he's been nursing throughout the week. And so it's a possibility that Justin Fields might actually start this game. But to me, it didn't really matter. The Pittsburgh Steelers offensively look like garbage. I don't think this team is going to be scoring a lot of points this year, other than maybe their defense might be able to do it for them, because their defense is stout. But at some point, it's going to cost them like it did last year. And the Falcons, on the other hand, they're a team where I look at where I'm like, they could potentially be pretty decent this year. You know, you got Kirk Cousins. He is coming off of that Achilles injury. But they also have Michael Penix Jr., the rookie they just drafted as well. So you look at the quarterback position, it's got the potential to be pretty decent. But let's just say Kirk Cousins is going to be the one who's going out there. I just feel like he's going to fit right in. With a lot of these, you know, they got Bijan Robinson, who's a huge weapon. And I kind of look at the Falcons as a dark horse team, kind of. I don't believe in them a lot, but I look at them where I feel like they're going to beat some people where we're like, holy shit, the Falcons beat some people. So I actually think the Falcons are going to dominate this one 28-14, just because I think the Steelers are terrible offensively, and who knows what the fuck we're going to get from them. And Simon also has the Falcons winning this one 27-21. Then we have the Arizona Cardinals at the Buffalo Bills. Right now, the Bills are a 7.5-point favorite. I mean, honestly, with Arizona, we have no idea what we're getting. And you could kind of say that with Buffalo, but they still have Josh Allen. They still have a pretty solid defense. And I just kind of look at them as coming out and just demolishing the Cardinals in this one, 41-10. And Simon also has them demolishing the Cardinals in this one, 24-7. Then we have the Tennessee Titans at the Chicago Bears. Right now, the Bears are a 5.5-point favorite. The Titans, I think, are going to be one of the worst teams in the league this year. Chicago, I think they're going to be on the upside. I think they're more of a 500 team this year, but I think there's definitely going to be some growth. I like the drafting of Caleb Williams at quarterback. I think that they finally have a guy at the quarterback position who's definitely going to be the future. And they're definitely going to have their growing pains for sure. Defensively, it's going to be really weird because usually Chicago's got a stout defense. Well, this year, they're the no-name defense. So I don't think there's going to be a lot there. But the Titans, I think, are just a horrible team. I think this is going to be a weird game where we just kind of see a bunch of field goals and some maybe some just random turnovers. But I have the Chicago Bears winning this one 17-16. And Simon also has the Chicago Bears winning this one 23-16. Then we have the New England Patriots at the Cincinnati Bengals. Right now, the Bengals are a 7.5-point favorite. I actually think the Patriots are going to be the worst team in the league this year, whereas the Bengals, they've got Joe Burrow coming back. There's a lot of talk about what's going to happen with Ja'Marr Chase over the weekend, but I don't think that's really going to be a problem for them. They do have a whole bunch of other weapons. They still have T. Higgins. Their defense, I think, is going to be one of the best defenses in the league, I feel like. I think they're going to cause a lot of turnovers and cause a lot of problems for the opposing quarterbacks. And I just think New England's terrible. So I have Cincinnati rolling in this one 40-7. And Simon also has Cincinnati in this one 24-20. Then the Houston Texans are at the Indianapolis Colts. Right now, the Texans are a 1.5-point favorite. This is a division matchup, but I do think the Texans are a much more put together team than the Indianapolis Colts. We have no idea what we're getting from the Colts this year. Whereas the Texans, I think they are all in this year. I think they're only going to get better from what they were last year. They've added a few good pieces, especially I feel like Stephon Diggs is going to go off and be a huge, huge weapon for CJ Stroud this year. But I do think this is going to be a close one since it is a division battle. Those usually tend to be closer. So I've got Houston winning this one 28-21. And Simon also has Houston winning this one 27-17. Then we have the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Miami Dolphins. These two teams, right now the Dolphins are actually a 3.5-point favorite, but these two teams to me are both up-in-the-air teams. I don't know what I'm getting from either of them. A lot of people are banking on the Dolphins this year, but to me, I don't really see it. I don't see them being consistent. Yes, they're probably going to score a lot of points, but what are they going to do on defense? Are they going to be a consistent team? And there's just so many questions for them, but it's the same thing on Jacksonville's side of the ball as well. I don't know what the fuck we're getting from them. Are we going to get a good Trevor Lawrence this year? Is he finally going to excel and be what we've expected him to be since draft day? So it's just, there's so many questions with both of these teams, but I do expect this to be a good game. I kind of feel like it's going to be one of those back and forth affairs where it's like touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. And they're just going back and forth with touchdowns all the way till the very end. I have Jacksonville winning this one 31-30. And Simon also has Jacksonville winning this one 23-16. Then we have the Carolina Panthers at the New Orleans Saints. Right now, the Saints are a 4.5-point favorite. If you don't know, Simon is a Carolina Panthers fan. So he's going with the Panthers, and good for him. He's going with the Panthers 20-10 because I always like to see that he's taking his team. Even though the Panthers probably are not going to be that good of a team this year, I just like to see that because if you don't know, I never pick against the Dallas Cowboys. I don't care how shitty they are. I don't care who they're going up against. I never, ever, ever pick against the Dallas Cowboys. Don't care how stupid that is in picks. It obviously hasn't hindered me so far since I've kicked Simon's ass these last 3 years, but I never pick against my team. So when I see him picking his team, I'm happy for that. But like I said, I don't think the Panthers are going to be that good this year. I think they could surprise. I think they're going to be a challenge for some teams, but they're going to be one of those teams that just kind of misses out on some games. And this one, I feel like it's going to be that. The New Orleans Saints, I think they're coming into this season a better team. Last year, they had a lot of growing pains, and I feel like this year is going to be the year that those growing pains kind of click, and they're a little bit more buttoned up this year. They do have a pretty solid defense. Derek Carr's got a lot of weapons to work with offensively. So I've got the Saints winning this one 20-10, so we've got the same score, but a different result in this one. Then we have the Minnesota Vikings at the New York Giants. Right now, the Vikings are a 0.5-point favorite. So that just goes to show you, I mean, I'm not shocked with that because I think both of these teams are terrible. I don't think either team's going to do a goddamn thing this year. The Vikings have nothing going on. They got rid of Kirk Cousins, and now Sam Darnold is their starting quarterback. The New York Giants have nobody Magoo at every single fucking position going on here. This is going to be just, I feel like a shit show of a game. But I have the Vikings winning 21-14 simply because I fucking hate the Giants. How about that? And Simon disagrees with me. He's going with the Giants on this one, 27-21. Probably he's going, maybe just going with the home team or something like that. But maybe he probably feels the same way I do about the Vikings, where it's like, what's going on with this team? But you could really say that about both. And like I said, I'm really just going with the Vikings because I fucking hate the Giants. Moving on to the afternoon games, we have the Las Vegas Raiders at the Los Angeles Chargers. Right now, the Chargers are a 2.5-point favorite. This is the first year of the Jim Harbaugh era with the Chargers. He usually turns teams around fairly quickly. I don't know if he's going to do that with this team this year. There's tons of questions. They don't have a lot of options for Herbert, in my opinion. They did upgrade the offensive line, but, you know, they don't have Keenan Allen anymore at wide receiver. They lost Mike Williams as well. And then they lost Austin Eckler too. So those are a lot of offensive weapons that they lost. Defensively, I think they're going to be pretty solid. Then you turn to the Raiders. I think the Raiders are a trash can ass team. They're really good defensively, offensively. What the fuck is going on here besides Devontae Adams? Quarterback, don't know what the hell is going to happen there. I kind of feel like this is going to be a team that's switching quarterbacks throughout the entire season. With that being said, though, this is a division matchup, so I think it's going to be a close game. I have the Chargers winning 23-20, and Simon and I disagree yet again. That's three in a row that we disagree on. He's got the Raiders winning 34-24. Then we have the Denver Broncos at the Seattle Seahawks. Right now, the Seahawks are a 4.5-point favorite. Both of these teams are also up in the air to me. I don't know what the hell we're going to get from either team. To me, Seattle was kind of fake last year, but they do have some playmakers. Denver, they are in complete rebuilding mode, so I kind of feel like they're gonna struggle throughout the majority of this season. So since Seattle's at home, I'm going to go with them 28-17. Simon and I disagree on this one as well. He actually has Denver winning 23-20. Then my Dallas Cowboys are at the Cleveland Browns. Right now, the Browns are a 2.5-point favorite. I think the Cowboys are actually going to be really good this year. I know a lot of people are counting them out, and that's totally fine. I mean, they're basically the same team they were last year. CD just got paid, so I expect to see him doing well on the field. We've got Brandon Cooks out there with them as well, and Ferguson, so I think that's going to do well. We did lose a couple of guys on the offensive line, but we also drafted a couple of guys in place. So I'm not really that concerned with the offensive line. It's really the ground attack. We did sign Dalvin Cook, which hopefully kind of shores us up just a bit there. But, I mean, I think overall the Dallas Cowboys defense is going to be the best in the league. And I really actually think they're going to dominate Cleveland in this one completely. I don't really think it's going to be much of a close game. I think Dallas is going to come right out and just score a lot of points in week one. I've got them winning 35-20. And then Simon also agrees with me. He's got Dallas winning 27-13. Then we have the Washington Commanders at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Right now, the Buccaneers are a 4.5-point favorite. I kind of look at both of these teams also going to struggle just a bit. I think the Buccaneers are a little bit more buttoned up and have a lot more offensive firepower, whereas with the Commanders, we have no idea what is going to happen with this team. They do have a rookie quarterback. I think he's going to end up being a pretty decent quarterback, but rookie quarterbacks are always going to struggle. And so I think that's what's going to be the problem with the Commanders this year, whereas the Buccaneers, their defense used to be one of the best in the league, and I feel like this year it's going to be the exact opposite. So I feel like their defense is going to be a problem, but their offense is going to be a problem for other people. I have the Buccaneers winning this one 27-17, also just because I hate the Washington Commanders, and I don't have to pick them just yet because it's week one, and week one is always a crapshoot. It's always a weird time during week one when it comes to picks. Simon also has the Tampa Bay Bucks winning this one 20-17. Then Sunday night football matchup is going to be the Los Angeles Rams at the Detroit Lions. Right now, the Lions are a 3.5-point favorite. The Rams, I feel like, are a team that has a lot of work to do defensively. I think offensively, they have a lot of weapons, and they could potentially be pretty solid. Their offensive line, still questions, but I think most of the questions lie on the defensive side of the ball. The Detroit Lions, basically the same team as last year. I expect them to still be pretty solid this year. I don't see why they would fall back, and I have them just coming out. I feel like this is going to be an offensive game where it's just back and forth, but I think the Detroit Lions are going to get the better of the Rams in this one, 35-28, and this is a disagreement between Simon and I. He's got the Rams winning 23-20. And then Monday Night Football, that matchup is going to be the New York Jets at the San Francisco 49ers. We will go more in depth on that one on Monday's show. But I do have the Niners winning that game, and so does Simon. So we only disagree on Sunday's games. But like I said, we'll go more in depth on the Niners game on Monday's show. So that is the first week of football. So let's move on to baseball and what we had going on this week. On Tuesday, Kyle Schwarber had another three-home run game in a 10-9 win over the Toronto Blue Jays for the Philadelphia Phillies. Schwarber had three home runs, went 5-for-6, and had six RBI on the night, and also scored the game-winning home run in the ninth inning. So Schwarber is just, if there's something that dude does well, it is fucking hit home runs. I mean, and what a time to get hot, too. The Phillies are finally starting to look good right now and starting to look like a World Series contender again, as I felt like they were for the majority of the beginning of the season. Then also on Tuesday night, the Atlanta Braves had a solid game over the Colorado Rockies, 3-0. But what was really solid was Chris Sale. I was just talking about him on Monday's show, talking about him having a career year, talking about him being a potential Cy Young Award winner, not just the candidate, but a winner. And he actually ended up striking out, having his 200th strikeout of the season. He is the first Atlanta Brave to do that ever in the history of their franchise. So not only is he having a solid year for himself, but he broke an Atlanta Braves franchise record with his 200th strikeout. And there is still a month of baseball left to go, so he could add to that total already. And he did end up pitching 7 innings that night with 9 strikeouts and 0 earned runs. So the guy continues to have an amazing season for the Braves. Then on Wednesday, the Chicago Cubs pitched a combined no-hitter in a 12-0 win over the Pittsburgh Pirates. It was Shohei Imanaga. He pitched, I think it was 7 or 8 innings he went. Then Pearson came in and Hodge came in relief. And they had a combined no-hitter against the Pittsburgh Pirates. So let's take a look at the playoff race and how it's looking for baseball right now, starting with the American League. The Baltimore Orioles are back in the number one spot, not only in the East, but overall in the American League. They currently hold a half-game lead over the New York Yankees. Then in second place, we have the Cleveland Guardians still holding on to their lead in the American League Central. Right now, they hold a 4-game lead over the Minnesota Twins. And then in the West, the Houston Astros hold a 4.5-game lead over the Seattle Mariners. And then in the wild card spots right now, we have the New York Yankees and the Minnesota Twins and the Kansas City Royals, who are starting to slump just a little bit. You know, I felt like that team was going to come in and take over the Central, but now they're starting to slump. We'll see what happens, though. I mean, it's very interesting between the Guardians, the Twins, and the Royals right now, not only for the division, but definitely for that wild card race as well. Then turning to the National League, the number one team is the Los Angeles Dodgers. They lead the West right now over the San Diego Padres by 5 games. Then in the East, we have the Philadelphia Phillies with an 8-game lead over the Atlanta Braves. And then in the Central, we have the Milwaukee Brewers with a 9-game lead over the Chicago Cubs. And then the wild card is looking like the San Diego Padres, the Arizona Diamondbacks, and the Atlanta Braves and New York Mets are tied right now. The Mets are actually tied with Atlanta as well with an 8-game eight games behind the Philadelphia Phillies in the East. But honestly, I don't really see either one of them having a shot. But the Mets right now are on a 7-game winning streak. So that National League East is pretty hot, as well as the National League West. It's going to be pretty interesting to see what happens here coming down the stretch for both for the wild card, really, because, I mean, the Central and the East pretty much are locked up, in my opinion. And I don't really see the Dodgers losing their grip either. So that National League wild card spot's looking pretty interesting, especially with the Braves and the Mets tied, and the Mets streaking hard right now. All right, now let's get back to my Trop 10 lists. I've taken a couple of episodes off of it because I was doing my NFL season predictions. But now let's get back to my Trop 10 favorite players from each of my favorite teams. So I've already done the San Francisco Giants, did that a couple weeks ago. So now, since it's the beginning of football season, we're going to do my Trop 10 favorite Dallas Cowboys. This was very, very, very difficult for me to whittle down. Now, the top five actually was not. I'm just going to spoil it for you all. They are all from my childhood. Those are the guys that they are why I love football, basically. And they are why I love the Cowboys. There aren't any guys who are playing right now, but I will say Dak, CD, Micah Parsons, those are three guys I look at who, depending on how their careers develop, they could potentially bust into this top 10, especially if they win a Super Bowl. If they win a Super Bowl or do something crazy, like Micah Parsons wins like an MVP as a defensive player or some shit like that, those are type of things that could bust you up into it. But definitely winning a Super Bowl or two or three or five would be excellent. But so none of the new guys that are currently playing are in this. That's just simply because they could add to their resumes and they could add to memories of mine. Whereas this top 10, these are all guys, not just from the Super Bowl years. There are other guys sprinkled in there, but man, when I was a kid, the Cowboys were so good, and it was so difficult for me to whittle this down to 10. I mean, I was like, shit, there's this guy, there's that guy. There are so many I probably could have made this a top 20 if I really wanted to, but I made it a top 10. So let's start off with number 10 on my top 10 favorite Dallas Cowboys. Offensive lineman, the OG, because he played offensive guard, but the OG, Larry Allen. Unfortunately, he did die last year, of course, but this is one of the greatest offensive linemen to ever play the game, and I will say it now, he is the greatest offensive lineman in Dallas Cowboy history, and that says a lot because we've had some great ones, but Larry Allen is it. He was a Dallas Cowboy from 1994 to 2005. I'm not going to talk about any of these guys' other careers outside of being a Dallas Cowboy, because this list is just solely based on them being a Cowboy and them being one of my favorite Cowboys. So with Larry Allen, man, he just was so reliable. He barely ever missed games. And he just was that dude. He was the anchor of that amazing offensive line we had. And that says a lot because that offensive line was stacked. But Larry Allen was the pinnacle of that offensive line. And anybody will tell you, any defenders that had to go up against Larry Allen, they were like, fuck, I gotta go up against Larry Allen. Even some of the craziest, like John Randall. John Randall is one of the craziest defensive ends we've ever had in the history of the league, and even he didn't like going up against Larry Allen. So that just tells you what a beast Larry Allen was, but he was one of my favorite dudes to watch, and shout out to him. We won two Super Bowls with him because he wasn't a part of the first Super Bowl winning team, but since the day he was drafted, he was one of the most reliable players ever in the history of the Dallas Cowboys. Then at number 9 on my top 10 favorite Dallas Cowboys, Darren Woodson. Played safety from 1992 to 2004. As a matter of fact, he was a Cowboy lifer. Played his entire career with the Dallas Cowboys. And I loved Darren Woodson. He was such a silent killer. You knew Darren Woodson was there, but you really didn't. He was always in the right place at the right time. He was knocking motherfuckers out. He would sometimes get you an interception every once in a while. And this guy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, by the way. He keeps getting looked over for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but I'm looking forward to the day he finally makes it in there, just because I feel like not only was he one of the best Dallas Cowboys safeties, but basically of the 90s, he was one of the most consistent safeties out there, and he was one of the anchors of this defense. I mean, I bet you the majority of the defenders who played with him would tell you Darren Woodson led this defense and he was the anchor of it all, even if he wasn't making the big plays, even though a lot of the times he was. I mean, he was always in the backfield. He was always sacking quarterbacks, taking down running backs behind the line of scrimmage. It was just amazing to watch Darren Woodson, and definitely one of my personal favorite Dallas Cowboys. Then at number 8 on my top 10 favorite Dallas Cowboys, good old Jason Witten. Played tight end from 2003 to 2017, retired in the 2018 year, and then came back in 2019 because he said he wanted to play with Dak Prescott. He actually holds the NFL record for the most games played at tight end. And just what I loved about Jason Witten, one of the most reliable dudes ever. You knew if the ball was in anywhere in his vicinity, that motherfucker was battling for it. One of my favorite plays ever was a Monday Night Football game against the Philadelphia Eagles. It might have been Sunday Night Football, but I'm pretty sure it was Monday Night Football. I know it was one of the night games. But basically, a Philadelphia defender comes trucking at Jason Witten. He loses his helmet, and fucking Jason keeps on running and scores a fucking touchdown. That is one of his signature moments. If you are a Cowboys fan, you know exactly what play I'm talking about. Like I said, I'm pretty sure it was Monday Night Football, though, but could have been Sunday Night Football. But Jason Witten was one of the most reliable players of all time. And just loved it watching him come to work every single day as a Dallas Cowboy. Then at number 7 on my top 10 favorite Dallas Cowboys, I know this is a guy who is not on most people's list, but I fucking love Terrell Owens. Played wide receiver for the Cowboys from 2006 to 2008. As a matter of fact, one of my least favorite days as a Dallas Cowboys fan was when they released Terrell Owens. I was so fucking pissed off. When I saw the breaking news that we released Terrell Owens, I was like, fuck you motherfuckers, because I love me some T.O. Not only was he a fantastic fucking football player, but fine as hell. And yes, that gets you some points in my book. But T.O., I loved it. He was so electric on the field. He would cross over the middle. He was so reliable, and I just loved watching him play. And like I said, the day the Cowboys released him, I was pissed. Pissed the fuck off. Because I think he could have done so many great things for us. And his time as a Cowboy, he produced on the field. He was always there to play the game, and he was just a fun player to watch. I just loved T.O. I actually always loved T.O. I loved him as a Niner. I hate saying this, but I loved him as an Eagle. I loved him when he played with the Bills. I think he played with the Bengals, too. But man, T.O., I love me some T.O. I still love me some T.O., and whenever I think about those couple of years we had T.O., it was just so fucking phenomenal because he was such a good wide receiver, and it was so fun to see him just mollywop defenders on a weekly fucking basis. Then at number 6 on my top 10 favorite Dallas Cowboys, DeMarcus Ware. Played defensive end for the Cowboys from 2005 to 2013. I actually was really happy for him when he went to the Denver Broncos and they won Super Bowl 50 because one of the most reliable players we ever had. He never wanted to miss a game. He would go all out every single game, and he just made quarterbacks' lives hell. And he would do it with the world's biggest smile on his face. He was such a beast, but looks like the most gentle giant you will ever fucking meet. But DeMarcus Ware, I loved DeMarcus Ware. I loved every game he played in. And see, when the Cowboys released him, it didn't piss me off like it did T.O. Because with DeMarcus, it was about, you know, he wanted to get paid. The Cowboys couldn't afford him. And it was just one of those things where it just had to happen. Whereas with T.O., they just let him go because some fucking Jason Garrett's little dainty fucking ass didn't like him. And fuck Jason Garrett, that little cunt. But anyways, DeMarcus Ware, when he left, it wasn't that type of way. It was just one of those business deals where he had to go. But I loved his career as a Cowboy. I always will think of him as a Cowboy, and it actually pisses me off that he didn't win a Super Bowl as a Cowboy, and he won one as a Denver Bronco, but he 100% deserved it because he would go on to have a great career with the Denver Broncos as well. Now at number 5 on my top 10 favorite Dallas Cowboys, Charles Haley. Defensive end for the Cowboys from 1992 to 1996, a part of all three of those Super Bowl teams. He actually ended up with 5 Super Bowl wins for his entire career and used to be the leader for a long, long time until, of course, Tom Brady broke that record. But Charles Haley was a beast mode motherfucker. As much as I love DeMarcus Ware, Charles Haley was like the exact opposite of DeMarcus Ware. He wasn't coming at you with a smile. He was coming at you with those big-ass fucking hands, and he was going to knock your ass down. Charles Haley was a motherfucking beast. He made my childhood so fucking great. I loved Charles Haley. Oh, God, just even thinking about Charles Haley just gets me excited because he was just the engine of that defense. I mean, like I said, Woodson pretty much was the captain of that defense, but Haley was the beast mode of that defense. And I loved me some Charles Haley. Then at number 4 on my top 10 favorite Dallas Cowboys, Deion Sanders. He played cornerback for the Cowboys from 1995 to 1999. I've discussed it so many times on this show, the Deion Sanders game, where he single-handedly took over a game, Monday Night Football against the New York Giants. Jason Garrett actually was that quarterback because Troy Aikman was injured that season. But basically, Deion would have punt return for a touchdown, kick return for a touchdown. He would score a touchdown. I know he had an interception. I can't remember if the interception was a touchdown or not, but I know he scored. I think the interception was a touchdown. Then when at wide receiver, he set us up, had a huge big play as a wide receiver and set us up for another touchdown. Basically, he took over the game. That was one of the greatest games ever to watch. But everything about Deion Sanders was so electric. I can't state this enough. If you did not get to watch the greatness that was Deion Sanders in real time, I am so sorry, because even the just watching old highlights of him doesn't do it justice either. Yes, the highlights are amazing to watch too, but to watch it in real time, to see this dude just take over a game the way he would in so many different ways. He prided himself on not only being the best cornerback in the game, but he wanted to do kick returns. He wanted to do punt returns. He wanted to be a wide receiver. He did it in the Super Bowl. He was so fantastic to watch. I loved Deion Sanders, not only as a Cowboy, but just as a player in general. Deion Sanders, when he would just intercept that ball and do his little dance, his little high step dance into the end zone. Oh, it was beautiful. I fucking love you, Deion Sanders, still to this day. I love what you're doing in Colorado, and I loved what you did for my Dallas Cowboys. Then at number 3 on my top 10 favorite Dallas Cowboys, Michael Irvin. Played wide receiver from 1988 to 1999, also a Dallas Cowboy lifer. Drafted by the Cowboys, ended his career as with the Cowboys. One of just the most exciting players to watch. He was called the playmaker, and there was a reason why, because if you threw the ball near him, he was making big plays. He also was a part of all 3 of the Super Bowl winning teams, and I just love him. Even still to this day, as an analyst, he still is Cowboys all day, just like me. And I love to see that. And he just made so much of my childhood so fun and so exciting to watch. And one of the best offensive players we've ever had in Dallas Cowboys history. Then at number 2 on my top 10 favorite Dallas Cowboys, Emmitt Smith. Running back with the Cowboys from 1990 to 2002. One of my favorite Emmitt moments. I mean, there are so many favorite Emmitt moments, but it is still etched in my brain when he broke the all-time leading rushing mark against the Seattle Seahawks. The Cowboys weren't even really a good team, so that was all we had to look forward to that year, was seeing him break that mark. But he so deserved it. He was such a bruiser running back. I know a lot of people like to just credit the offensive line, which of course was a huge part of why he did what he did. But I'm sorry, man, if you don't see the greatness that was Emmitt Smith, you don't even know what a good-ass running back he was. He was so durable. He played through so many fucked up injuries, fucking dislocated shoulders and all this kind of shit, and he would still show out every single time. Like I said, all-time leading rusher, 18,355 yards, touchdown leader, 164 touchdowns, and then also, rushing attempts is an all-time NFL record, 4,409. He just was so durable, so reliable, and just such a game changer and such a huge fixture and piece of that dynastic Dallas Cowboys 3 Super Bowl championship run. But at number 1, if you know, you know. If you know Katie Tropp, you know who my favorite Dallas Cowboy is. There was no question. He's got a tattoo on my body. That is how much I love Troy Aikman, quarterback of the Cowboys from 1989 to 2000, also a lifer as Cowboys. But Troy Aikman is why I love the Cowboys. Since I was a kid, I still remember the first poster I had on my wall was a Troy Aikman poster where he was in like a Cowboys hat, kind of dressed like a cowboy with like cowboy boots and stuff. It said strong arm of the law on it. I have numerous autographs, memorabilia, football cards, jerseys. I mean, I am Troy Aikman till I D-I-E. I mean, in third grade, this is how I ride for Troy Aikman. I would still do this, by the way. In third grade, I grew up in Reno, Nevada, which is mostly 49ers, Raiders country because, you know, Reno is kind of near the Bay Area. So I grew up with mostly Niners Raiders fans. And I remember this kid, he just moved from Texas. I can't remember exactly where, but he moved to Reno from Texas, and he was a Cowboys fan as well. So we were like the two Cowboys fans in class. I was in third grade, by the way. This is when at the height of the Cowboys Niners rivalry, by the way. And I remember they had this kid cornered, and they're talking shit to him about how the Cowboys suck, blah, blah, blah. And I remember saying to myself, if any of these motherfuckers come over talking shit to me about the Cowboys, it's on. So one of these motherfuckers comes walking up to me, and I'm wearing a Troy Aikman shirt, and he says to me, "Troy Aikman sucks." I dropped my Dallas Cowboys backpack so fast and put this motherfucker in a headlock and wailed on his ass until the teacher came out and told me to stop. That is how hard I ride for Troy Aikman. You do not talk shit about Troy Aikman in my presence because, first of all, you know, a lot of people like to write him off as not really being a part of this. I mean, yes, the Cowboys team of the 90s was an amazing stacked-ass team. But guess what? Every Super Bowl team is a good overall team. But any dynasty team, they are stacked with Hall of Famers. So if you look at every dynastic team throughout the history of the league, it's not just one player who wins it. And everybody will tell you from the Cowboys of the 90s who played with Troy Aikman, he was one of the best to ever do it. He was reliable, he was a leader, and he didn't put up with shit. He wanted to win, and that was what he did. I know a lot of y'all don't know this, but Troy Aikman was basically Tom Brady before Tom Brady hit the league. Troy Aikman was the youngest dude winning the Super Bowl. Troy Aikman was the youngest dude winning these playoff games. He used to own a bunch of fucking records before the great Tom Brady came in and raped all of the quarterback records, as we all know them to be now. But Troy Aikman held it down. P.S., Troy Aikman was the number one overall pick of the NFL draft. That right there tells you how fucking good he was even in college and in high school. Check the stats, stupids. I know y'all like to write him off, but guess what? Troy Aikman was one of the best things about this 90s team, and he was my favorite player growing up. It also doesn't hurt that he is a fine-ass motherfucker still to this day. In his 50s, the dude is fine as hell. I always look forward to games he is the announcer of because I get to look at Troy Aikman for the entire game. You all knew, if you know me, that Troy Aikman was going to be number one on my list because he is why I like the Cowboys. He was my entire childhood. As many Cowboys as there have been over the years, nobody to me has ever been able to exceed what Troy Aikman has meant to me personally. And I love Troy Aikman. So that was the easiest. I knew once I started the list, the first name I wrote down was Troy Aikman because, hello, I'm a Troy Aikman girl. I'm a quarterback girl. Hell, my favorite number is 8. I always have, if you say pick a number, I'm always going to pick 8. When I go to concerts, and if the seat number has an 8 in it, I want the seat number with an 8 in it. Or just straight up 8. Because I love I have the number 8 actually tattooed on me on numerous spots of my body. And that is because of Troy Aikman, because he was number 8. When I was a kid, I would always pick number 8, and ever since then, I always pick number 8 because of Troy Aikman. So still to this day, Troy Aikman is with me. So yes, my favorite Cowboy of all time, of course, is Troy Aikman. All right, y'all. Enjoy the first weekend of pro football. And then, of course, we've got college football smashed in there on Saturday. Not a lot of crazy games, which is why we didn't talk about it. But we'll see what happens throughout the weekend. But enjoy the first weekend of pro football. And I will talk to you fools on Monday.